Welcome to Sunday Night Flesh and Blood. I'm Nick, here with Colin and Ryan. We are Team Raising Quell, a subsidiary of the Romping Club, and we're here with Episode 3. Next weekend, we're going to be going to Atlanta for the Battle Harden, so we'll talk about our decks. And then before that, we're going to jump into a discussion about the Calling Phuket and talk about the metagame breakdown, top 8, all that stuff. So let's jump into it. All right, guys. So we have our metagame breakdown from the Calling. It looks a lot like the Pro Tour in LA. Very similar. I think on this, the top four heroes, there are 31 KOs, 29 Dromais, 26 Victor, and 24 Dorinthia. I think that's the same top four heroes from the Pro Tour, except Victor and Dorinthia are flipped here. Because I remember Dory being the third most played hero. Yeah, look at that. Off the dome. That's impressive.
Even Azalea is the same, fifth most played.
Really?
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And I thought Azalea was a really good meta pick. And then Azalea was clearly a good pick for this Calling because it was taken down by one Brody Spurlock, a true Globetrotter. My first thought when I saw that he won was like, oh, wow, he actually went to that. I was like, I don't know why I'm surprised when I see Brody going across the world to these Callings. Then my second thought was, is he really about to fly all the way across the world this week and kick my ass in Atlanta?
Oh, for sure he is.
The answer is probably yes. So I'm going to walk into that convention center in Atlanta and I'm going to see those glasses and see Brody just ready to freaking give me the beat down. So anyways.
Maybe he'll play a fun deck since he just got the win on Azalea. Maybe he'll go play something janky.
Yeah, maybe he'll play Dromai fun, for like you. Dromai.
Yeah.
Anyways. So Ryan, you weren't here last week. How was your week? Mm-hmm. Are you excited to be back?
Yeah, I'm excited to be back. It was just such a long Easter weekend. I needed to take a night off, but I'm glad to be back and talk about some Flesh and Blood.
Yeah. So, anything stand out to you in the calling Phuket? I've been saying that wrong. Just looked up how to pronounce Phuket, but you could probably guess.
You've been saying it. This is the only way I see to say it.
Yeah, I've been saying that Phuket the whole time.
I think what's surprising to me is 8 Phi. He didn't seem to be highly represented in Pro Tour. I know he's a popular hero, but seeing more Phi than Kasai is kind of interesting to me. And unexpected.
Yeah, it's funny, there's the same amount of Phi at the Pro Tour and the Calling. And there was, more players at the Pro Tour.
Same amount of day two conversions, I think, as well, which is zero.
True, yes.
So, you got shout out to those dedicated Phi players. They're probably still chasing that high from Stubby's Phi.
Mm-hmm.
They got the Stubby's Phi hangover, maybe. Or they just think it's a fun hero. And, more power to them. I think both Brutes had kind of a bit... Both of the other Brutes outside of KO, I think, kind of fell off a little bit. Reinar and Levi were both six heroes, which that's like a lot less than Pro Tour, isn't it? Or it's like the ratio about the same?
Yeah, the ratio is about the same. I think Levia dropped a decent amount. Reinar is about the same. Levia was actually the eighth most popular at Pro Tour, and she's now like the 11th or 12th most popular. So she did drop a little bit. But I think part of that comes from just smaller numbers where, two players does kind of influence that a lot. Reinar had a decent Pro Tour. That was what I would talk about when I saw the Calling, though, is he didn't convert at all. 0 of 6 Reinars, day 2'd. The Calling, unlike the Pro Tour, is completely constructed. Like, there's no limited that you can like be like, oh, maybe the Reinars had good constructed and didn't make it in limited. but no, that was not the case. 6 Reinars, none made day 2. Same thing with Levia. So that was the main thing that jumped out to me, because honestly there isn't a ton here that is super different from the Pro Tour.
Yeah, nothing here is super surprising to me. Like, even Azalea winning, I mean, like, Azalea is just good. Like, maybe
yeah,
like right there with KO as best aggro deck in the format, in my opinion. But she has more disruption. So she's scary. I've been testing some Bolton into Azalea, and like, I don't know, historically it's not good for Bolton. There's a lot of matchups that historically aren't good for Bolton. But I was testing Take It on the Chin into the matchup, because it's like, oh, it gets around Dominate, because it's just an instant that prevents two, and then like I still get an action point. But I was running into an issue where like it really wasn't that good, because a lot of the times when I was facing a Dominated Arrow and wanted to like block as much as I could, or when I wanted to use it, I also wanted to like block with the rest of my hand or just have like one card left. So I'm getting the agility token, but then I only have like a one card hand. So the go again is like, doesn't matter. True. I can't do anything else. Mm-hmm. So that was like a really interesting finding. I tested a little bit with Tom, somebody local to us, who went 8-0 on Azalea at the Pro Tour in Constructed. Yeah, 8-0. And yeah, we played three games. I think I won one of them and lost the other two, but decided that like, that's probably just going to stay in the sideboard for the matchup, and I'll keep the Courageous Steel Hands in for that matchup and try to force over some more damage and on hits and stuff. Anyways, so
yeah, I don't know if this is where we saw the conversation going, but while we're on the topic of Azalea, I kind of saw like my way that I think I have to do to beat Azalea, because I also don't love the matchup, is to make her do what she doesn't want to do, which is block. Since she has a lot of two blocks and things, and really the only way that Reinar can do that is through like threatening her arsenal, so like that's kind of specific to Reinar, but I think that applies to a lot of heroes. Like if Azalea is somebody that you're struggling with, you just, she doesn't want to block you, so try and make her have to block you, I guess.
Yeah, she's one of the only reasons I have CNC in my list at all. Like if she wasn't a thing, I probably wouldn't have CNC in my list. But Ryan, what were you gonna say?
I was just agreeing. Obviously, Dash isn't a great matchup into Azalea either. And I don't have the luxury of running a CNC, so I just have to go fast and pop off max Vs and kind of pray.
Yeah. So you're not trying to grind Azalea out. You're just going with your boost plan on Dash and just trying to punch her in the face as fast as you can.
Yeah. Like Colin said, question, she doesn't want to block anything, so she'll take majority of my damage. Yeah. and it's all vanilla for the most part, right? So, I mean, hopefully I get lucky with some key pulse wave harpoon grabs, but outside of that, just kind of throw damage and hope I don't get red in the ledger.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Other than red, is there any like on hits that you're really scared of?
Not really. I think I can play my whole hand a lot of times, so Inertia doesn't really affect me. Blood Rot's just more damage. Frailty kind of sucks. Makes my pistol shoot for one, which feels really bad. Mm-hmm. But then, like, Remorseless, I guess, late game is pretty bad. Prevents me from doing, like, big high-octane turns and going wide. It's probably what's sticking out to me is probably Remorseless.
Yeah, Remorseless is really interesting. We saw in stream at the calling in the final between Brody and putting Tam on Katsu. The Katsu played through a Remorseless and took like 6 damage or so from
it. Yeah.
Wow.
Which is like, really interesting. You know, I'm going to take his word for it that that's the correct play. He's one of the best players in the world. It's just really interesting that that's the case, and just shows you the power of Remorseless, because Brody was coming in for like either 14 or something like that. With Azalea, so essentially like a 20 damage turn, because he also had to take 6 on his turn.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. Jinx. Wait, so the way Remorseless is worded, Ryan, like every time you load a pistol, does it do a damage to you?
No, it's only when you play action cards, I believe.
It's action cards, right?
Yeah.
Not when you activate action. Okay.
So loading pistol and induction.
Yeah,
chamber.
Which is,
yeah.
That's interesting. I can't believe I've been playing this game so long and I still don't know the rules.
So one other thing that stood out to me about the calling was that like if you look at the conversion rate at the calling, a lot of it is just the most played heroes. it's not like, oh, you know, this disproportionate amount of KO or Dorinthia or Victor made it. It's pretty proportionate. They just kind of, oh, you know, 30% of each or 28% of each made it today too or whatever. Except Uzuri, 2 of 2, which is a very small sample size. You know, like we didn't really talk about like Teclo, for instance, on Pro Tour 1. Or, geez, sorry, the last Pro Tour, the one Teclo that made it. We didn't spend a lot of time with that. But this is a smaller meta, and 2 is a big difference compared to 1 for me in terms of players converting. So 2 Uzuri, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, 100% conversion.
Yeah.
I think, and also that reminds me too, because we were talking about this earlier, just to bring it back to my guy Bolton. But Bolton had a decent conversion again here. 38% here at Pro Tour's day 2 conversion was like, what, like 9 of 10 Bolton players, 90% conversion to day 2. So, I mean, Bolton back-to-back events, putting up the conversions, which is cool. And I guess that could kind of lead us into talking about the Battle Hardened real quick. That was won by, who won the Battle Hardened? Oh my gosh, what was it? Azalea won the Battle Hardened.
Teddy Tai, I think.
And yeah, and a Bolton. Yeah, Bolton made it all the way to the finals. Beat a Dromai in top 8. I would have loved to have seen that game. But beat a Dromai and a Levia in top 8. And then in the finals, lost a really close game to Azalea. And I was keeping up in the Bolton chat earlier today. And the player posted. What the heck? Sorry. Oh, it's like an ambulance driving through my neighborhood super slow. Anyways.
We can't do
hope. Hope everything's okay. but yeah, it was an Azalea he actually beat in the final round of Swiss and then lost to in the finals. So he was super close to getting there. But yeah, dang. So the Battle Hardened meta was, there are 95 players, 15 KO, 12 Victor, 11 Azalea, 10 Dorinthia, 10 Dromai. So less Dromais. And I chalked that up to people wanting to actually have some fun in the Battle Hardened. Not wanting to, or maybe all the Dromais are still playing the calling. I don't know how the scheduling worked.
Yeah, the meta in general is pretty similar. I think there's a difference in Levia proportionally. It's about half the players in the Battle Hardened, but almost the same amount of Levia, which kind of makes sense if, you know, you see Levia as like a variance deck and maybe the stakes aren't quite as high and people are like, yeah, I'll just go see if I can do the thing. But also, I might just be reading into it too much, and it might just be like, oh, you know, 5 of the Levias were free on Sunday, and some of the other players weren't.
Yeah. Some of them wanted to go to Shapeshifter Sealed instead.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, that's pretty cool. Do you guys have any – I mean, I guess the big tragedy of the weekend is that Dromai did not win either event and is still around. So Dromai is still going to be around next weekend in Atlanta when we're going to Atlanta for the Battle Hardened.
And so for our listeners for the, you know, ProQuest season.
Yeah, for the first week of ProQuest season. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about in terms of the calling in Battle Hardened and Phuket? Or do you want to just move straight into talking about what we're doing this weekend, going to Atlanta or next weekend?
Yeah, no, that's about it for me.
Yeah, ready to move on.
Ryan, you got anything? Sweet. So, yeah, the three of us, myself, Colin, Ryan, a lot of our other locals, some other other members of the Romping Club. They're also a part of the Romping Club umbrella. They're the Turtle Squad, a subsidiary of the Romping Club. We're renting a car, going up to Atlanta together. Going to try to take down the Battle Hardened. I was thinking, I may have said this to you guys before, but I was thinking, you know, James White talks about, you know, he wants people to play the game and see the world. And I've realized that for us, it's a little different. The last time the three of us traveled out of the state to play Flesh and Blood was for Battle Hardened Atlanta last year. So for some people like Brody and Michael Fang, you know, these people, it's play the game, see the world, how James White intended. But for us, it's play the game, see Atlanta. Which, you know, great city.
Yeah,
so we're gonna try to catch the aquarium. We're gonna go see that whale shark at the aquarium. If anybody listening hasn't been to the Georgia Aquarium,
gonna get some chicken wings.
You're gonna be there. Oh, go get some chicken wings at the AC Hotel. Holy cow! The lobby of that I don't even know. It's the bar at the AC Hotel in Atlanta by Marriott, I think. Best chicken wings I've ever had in my life. Like, hands down.
Huge shout out.
I'm really not exaggerating. Like, we're not staying there this time. I might walk over there on Friday night and go get those chicken wings. So.
Oh, I'm with you.
You can't stop me. You guys can't stop me. So. But yeah, if you're going and you have time and you've never been to the Georgia Aquarium, I'm actually serious. You should absolutely go. It is the best aquarium I've ever been to in my life. Like, they have a whale shark. It's insane. Anyways, so we can talk about
the walrus show is also great.
Oh yeah, the walrus show is awesome. That walrus had so much personality. Yeah, that was great. That was a great time. but yeah, do you guys want to talk about just like how we're feeling, the decks we're gonna play, anything that we've been thinking about this week, like our confidence?
Should we maybe
levels?
Take it one by one? Like one of us go and like, hey, this is kind of what I'm playing and what I'm feeling and the decisions that I have made.
Yeah, let's do that. Who wants to start? I don't want to start.
I can, since it was my idea. So in case Ryan needs a second to think about it. So yeah, obviously I'll be locking Ryan R. Locked him about 2.5 years ago for calling Atlanta. I have made some changes recently, so geez, I just called a calling too. Battle hardened Atlanta. I'm not gonna go through my whole list, obviously, but to give people an idea, it's similar to Pablo Pintor's Pro Tour list. You know, he's a better player than me. I'll see what he's working with, and then see how I can play into that. I made a couple changes, but basically the list is a heavy intimidate list that's got some agile windups in the sideboard so you can speed up and get extra action points when you need to. For instance, clearing dragons or just in certain matchups where the defense reactions, which are cards that come out for me when my agile windups come in, aren't super powerful or don't win you the game. Like, they're not your win condition because like you can't trade value with a certain deck. So like for me, I really still haven't completely decided, but currently I'm taking out my defense reactions into Kasai because I'm losing the mid-range trading game with Kasai because she gets so much saber value off me. And so that would be a matchup where I'm like trying to go faster. That's my deck. Heavy intimidate, a little bit faster package in the sideboard. Honestly, like, I know how to play Reinar, but I'm still not super confident for these huge tournaments. A lot of times I'm just like, man, my deck is just a little bit too much. I need to see this one card. And if I don't, and the player is really good, and specifically if they're really good and it's an aggro deck that doesn't give me time to pitch deck or, you know, pitch a Blood Rush early and then see it again, it's going to be hard for me. So also on top of that, Dromai used to be one of my best matchups and it's gotten much tougher. Dromai players are better than they used to be. They have a lot more tools than they used to be. Chromai Ash is so good into Reinar. And I'm also running fewer six powers because I've put in more intimidate. So that matchup's gotten tougher. Dorinthea, like Hatchet's Dorinthea is just real, real good. Like, I can beat it, but things have to go right for me. If we're just sitting there both executing our game plans and the game goes long, it's real, real tough. But if you give me a lot of Victor, then I'd feel good. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Mechanologists, then I'd feel good. But the Warriors and Dromai are pretty tough. So I'm not, like, super confident, but I do like my deck. Like, Pablo built a good list, and I made a couple changes that work better for me. And I like my deck. I'm just... there's just a couple matchups that I'm like, man, I'm just not sure that I'm running the right game plan because I'm just telling my deck to do its thing. And if it doesn't do its thing really fast, I kind of lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all super fair. It's interesting to hear that, like, you don't feel super good about Dromai and the Warriors, because that's also how I feel. Like, Dromai and, like, the Warrior Mirror is, like, really hard. Yeah,
really, that's probably really why neither of us are super confident, because that's a big part of the meta.
I also feel like that.
Yeah, shit. Maybe we should all be playing Dory.
Well,
Ryan, do you want to talk about we're gonna your struggle. List and stuff?
Yeah, sure.
By struggle, you mean three of the eight top
I'm
eight.
I'm like... Yeah, so I'm like 75% locked in on Dash. I'm going to bring KO as a backup deck just in case I panic last minute, and then I'm going to pivot right into that, and I'll feel way more comfortable. But right now, I'm on Dash. I feel pretty 50-50 into a lot of my matchups. And I'm just running a classic hybrid list. There's no Slab Dash, no Turtle Dash, none of that stuff for me. I think the one weird change that I made recently was I removed unmovables from my pistol plan, just to go with more sinks, more fates, and reinforce the lines. Without Bravo being highly represented, I don't need to tuck that into Arsenal to get, to block crushes. So I took those out. It feels pretty good. So I like the change so far. I feel like okay into a lot of my matchups, and I feel confident in my ability to pilot the deck well. But like Colin said, I feel like I need to see my cards. I need to see. I can't boost away max Vs or high octanes, mm-hmm. or else it's going to be really tough to get over some of these more defensive decks like Victor or Dorinthia. I think that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to see the good half of your deck.
That's really interesting about unmovable, because I just brought in an unmovable for the first time in like since Starva rotated. I haven't had an unmovable in my deck. And I just brought it in for Azalea mostly, but I also like it into Victor.
Yeah, I think the thing with Victor for me is that the only dominate I really see out of him is Macho Grande, and there's no crush effect on it, so I don't need to block as much damage as I need to. All the overpower stuff, I can just, throw a couple reactions on it and be fine. There's no hero that I'm looking at right now that I would want to play unmovable into, except for Bravo. But you see on his, on the calling representation, he's like, what, 6 from the bottom, which is another shocking thing he probably didn't talk about.
Yeah.
That's my thoughts on unmovable right now, in Dash at least.
Yeah, so part of the consideration for unmovable for me against Victor is cards in deck. Where unmovable from Arsenal is like one card out of my deck that blocks 8, whereas normally if they're like coming at me with a spinal, I gotta use 3 cards from my deck, even if it's not dominated, and that's a big deal. So to you, that's just not a game state that really ever matters.
Yeah, no, I don't think that. I don't get to a point where I get fatigued by Victor. Think Victor, it's a tough matchup. I bring in pistols and D-reacts, so I go really slow. But the thing with Victor is he's okay blocking with 2 cards and then sending back, an 8 power, something with crush on it. So and I'm okay also blocking with 2 cards. So I don't ever feel like I'm getting fatigued by Victor. You know what I mean? And I'd rather throw 2 cards that are 2 reds that can just, get them out of my hand, and then load pistol a few times and shoot back for more damage than they're hitting me with.
Oh, that's so interesting. Flesh and Blood is so cool, because like if I throw like 3 reds to block Victor, I'm like, this is so bad. That's like almost 20 damage that I could threaten him with, and I need to threaten all that damage, or else he's just going to block me until I have no cards in my deck. And not that he's like trying to fatigue, but just like he ends up fatiguing me by damage.
Right.
But that's cool. Your deck's like almost working on the opposite axis.
Oh yeah, because the last thing I want to see in second cycle is like 2 or 3 reds in my hand, because that is such a tempo swing. I can't load my setup, and it like honestly kills me. So the faster I can get them out of my deck, the better.
So you just need all blues second cycle. So you're just like pew 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 pew.
Exactly. Yep.
Am I really? I feel like I'm really laggy. Am I laggy? Or do I sound fine?
Good.
I guess. Okay. Cool. Ryan, is one of the reasons that you're not like with unmovable, because like the Colin has it for Azalea, but like you wouldn't want it into Azalea because it's not a Mechanologist card, so you can't boost it. Well, like you could boost it, but you'd lose your action point.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look at that, dude. I'm figuring out how Dash works finally.
Pistol. I've tried doing pistol plan to Azalea, and man, it can go pretty poorly. Sitting back and letting Azalea just batter me while I try to put Diriax in Arsenal. It's not a good situation. Yeah. And like she'll take my four damage from pistol all day, and she'll just send back 14, 17 with like 30 on hits. And she eats through armor.
Oh, and frailty tokens.
So, yeah. And frailty tokens. It's bad.
Yeah, dude, that makes sense. Dude, you might know more about Dash than me, so I'll concede that.
Probably not.
So, yeah. All right, I haven't talked about my deck yet. I'm bringing Bolton. Locked that also about 2.5 or 3 years ago, just like Colin. I like want to say I'm feeling fine, but I'm not at all.
For people who don't know, like what's your weapon and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, so I'm on a full like Raiden build. I've never really been like a Sabres player. I played Sabres like a little bit when way back in the day, like when Lightning Briar existed. I like had to run Sabres to beat Lightning Briar. And still did it like once out of every 100 games. A little bit like in the beginning of the Lexi meta, keep Sabres in the sideboard for that. Other than that, I've like fully moved off of Sabres like ever. I don't ever want to be playing Sabres. Even if the meta was right for it, I probably wouldn't be running it. So I'm on full Raiden build. I've run Soulbond and Tunic. Obviously in different matchups, can't run them at the same time. I probably run Soulbond into more matchups than most Bolton players. I run it into Azalea. I run it into Bravo, which is like not super popular amongst Bolton players. I run it into all the Brutes beside. No, I've run it into all the Brutes now. I've kind of settled on it into Leviathan as well. Run it into Mech. And I run it into the Ninjas as well. Yeah. So I run into all those matchups. Everything else, I run Tunic. Illusionist, Warriors, I run Tunic. Victor, I run Tunic. I'm feeling okay. Obviously, like I have played, not even exaggerating, I've probably played like 2,000 games of Bolton. Like I've probably played that many games with this deck or a deck similar. So it's like I know how the deck functions. I'm confident in all of my game plans going into this event. I feel like that's kind of a level up I've had recently, like over the past six months to a year, where it's like I've gotten better at like not just figuring out what my sideboard is going to be, but like what is my game plan of how I'm going to win this game. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've gotten better at that part of the game.
Yeah.
And I'm confident that I have the right game plan into all my matchups. But the thing that worries me is like, even though my game plan into Dromai, I think is the game plan that gives me the best chance to win, but it's like still not a good matchup for me. Like I'm still probably not going to win. I'm going to lose 65-70% of the time against like Dorinthia. I think my game plan into Dorinthia and my sideboard plan into Dorinthia is a really good one. And it gets me like maybe like close to 50-50 on Talishar. I'm like 80% into Dorinthia, but I think a lot of those are like people just picking up the list after Pro Tour, you know, like they're still learning the list. Yeah, like that's definitely what that is.
30%.
Yeah. Again, like I've done like some specific testing with like friends and having them, that people that I trust to like pilot the deck well. And it like feels like close, but the problem is like in that matchup and against Kasai even, it's like all of the pressure is on me to win. Like it's not very hard for them to lose that matchup, if that makes sense. Like it's not like they're not going to lose. I have to win. And I think my plans are good and like I'm confident in my plans, but it's just like going into an event, it's just like stressful to like know that I'm going to have to work so much harder than my opponents if they're on these specific decks. And you know, props to them for bringing a better deck. I do feel great in a Kano. Like I want to see Kanos at this point. I finally put in a couple, take it on the chin in my list. And like, dude, I haven't lost. I mean, I haven't been playing like Majin Bay or anybody, but like I've been like farming Kanos that I've been playing against. Take it on the chin is like so, so good in that matchup. Obviously, prevent two. And like I have Spell Void two, Soul Bond prevents one. And if I have a Take It on the Chin in Arsenal, it's like they can't combo me from like, they have to get me to like 15. But also with Take It on the Chin, I get free action points so I can kill them faster. So it's like, oh, that's been great. Prism is free. Oh, if I could see Kanos and Prisms all day in Atlanta, I would coast to top eight, I think. That's probably a lie. It's going to bite me in the ass. I'm going to lose to a Kano round one, a Prism round two.
Yeah, that's the thing about, yeah. I mean, both those decks are that they're decks that like can just like beat anyone if they draw right.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, you know, it's like, it's just, and I'm sure you guys go through this too, but it's like, depending on the day, it's like, I feel like I'm like a great player and I know everything about my hero and I know I've solved all the matchups. And then like I wake up the next day and I'm like, do I know anything about how to play this game? Like, do I know anything? And it's like, yeah, like I'm kind of just feeling like, I don't know if I know anything. But I've told myself I'm not playing any. Friday is round one at Battle Hard Atlanta. Like there's not a lot else I'm going to like learn. All I'm going to do is stress myself out. I'm going to like draw weird one game on Talishar and like change four sideboard slots and like ruin everything. So I'm like, yeah, we're going to play some Hatchets Olympia.
Yeah.
But
there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what we're going through, like a lot of people go through before, you know, your big event, whether your big event is a, you know, PQ because you only kind of play locally, or your big event is World Championships. I think a lot of people like kind of like a week or so out are like questioning themselves a lot. So I think it's normal. The one thing I don't want to get too hung up on is like, at least for me, and like, you know, everyone has different feelings about this depending on the hero you play, is like my matchups. You know, I don't want to go into it with them. And I realized as I was speaking last time, and you kind of reinforced it, Nick, like, I don't want to go in with like, oh, I need these matchups to win, you know? I want to go in with like, okay, I have this game plan into all these heroes, and I don't have like, this is a 30-70 matchup in my head, because like, that doesn't matter. What matters is like the one game that I play.
Yeah.
You know, right. Round one, that's what matters. It doesn't matter if this is a 30-70 matchup. It's that I beat this person sitting across from me.
Yeah. Yeah, you're playing against that person. You're not playing against that matchup. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, I'm playing that person. I'm not playing like the I don't know, there's got to be some kind of math word for it, but like the most likely outcome. I'm playing towards one outcome one time.
No, I like how I like that. I need to think like that too. It's like I'm really bad about I would bet my opponents like probably don't like it, but I'm really bad about like if I sit across from a drill, my head like will be like, oh man, this is gonna be rough. Like I'll say that out loud. But it's just, and I'm sure my opponents are like, what the hell? Like, this guy probably is an asshole. But it's not. I'm just sad that you're playing a hero that beats mine.
Not an asshole,
yeah,
just
yeah,
selfish.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh, man. So, Ryan, when you win Battle Hard in Atlanta, what legendary do you think you're going to pull?
Oh man, I don't know. I'm gonna probably pull the Vambrace. It's the most underwhelming legendary of all time.
Wait, wasn't that was that, I think that's what was pulled last year at Battle Hard Atlanta.
Oh, was it? I'm glad I didn't win that one. Then I did it on a purpose.
Yeah. No, I threw. Yeah, I think it was, because I remember getting back to the hotel room and like watching the stream of like, oh, what do you open? And like everyone on the stream was like, oh. They were so sad.
Yeah. So I've got one question for you guys. We just talked about the calling meta and how it was like pretty similar to Pro Tour. Like, I don't think there's a ton of takeaways that you weren't takeaways from Pro Tour. But did you guys change anything, or even if you ended up not changing it, test anything after the battle or the Pro Tour? I guess the biggest things from Pro Tour were like 4 KOs in the top 8 and then the rise of Dorinthia. So is there anything you guys like tested or changed or anything like that?
I got a good one, but mine might go on for a while.
Yeah.
So Ryan, you go ahead.
Ryan, you go first. If Nick's, you're going to take a while.
Yeah, I'll go first. I think the unmovable change came from the Pro Tour data. Seeing Bravo so low kind of drove that change, like I was talking about earlier. But yeah, after that, like...
Yeah, that makes sense.
That seeing the data from Pro Tour is kind of what made me start getting more serious about Battle Hardened Atlanta, start testing more. Playing a lot of KO in testing, Dory, lots of Victor. It's very popular, especially at our locals, lots of Guardian. So yeah, not much change from my typical hybrid list, but the unmovable was probably the biggest thing.
Were you on unmovable into Dory before?
I was, but it didn't feel the greatest. Sometimes
even in Dawnblade, it didn't feel great.
Yeah, I mean, it felt fine. Paying three for a defense reaction never feels like super great when you're trying to set up pistol.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it felt fine. Not bad enough to want to cut it, but I think parking any other D reacts in Arsenal is just as good. But yeah.
And so how are you siding Dorinthea nowadays? Are you still siding her as if she's Dawnblade with your D-reacts? Or are you just going aggro because that works better against hatchets? If it even does, I don't know.
Yeah, I've tested it a few times into the hatchets version. My game plan is just to side in pistol package. I think being defensive works against hatchets. Just as good as it does against Dawnblade nowadays. The matchup's not nearly as great as it used to be into Dawnblade. It's a little bit tougher, especially since Heavy Hitters came out and gave Dory some fun tools for her. But hatchets, I don't feel as pressured to keep counters off Dawnblade. I don't think it can snowball as easy as Dawnblade, so I feel like I have a little bit more room to breathe when setting up my pistol plan. So yeah, I'm just citing pistols, items, D-reacts, and just trying to build up my board state to grind a late game.
Makes sense. Nick, what were you gonna say?
To Ryan's point too about like Dawnblade and stuff, I think that the Hatchet Story deck is like, I think, more powerful just on average than the Dawnblade build. But the Dawnblade build is definitely way harder to play against. You always are guessing. You know, like, what do they have? Do they have it? Do they not? Do I dump my hand here? Are they going to get over it? Like, so it's, I think I would probably rather sit down across from, like, 10 Hatchet Dories than 5 Hatchet, 5 Dawnblade. Just because, like, it's been a big tournament, you know, it's, like, not as mentally taxing. And it's, like, it's easier to see your way out, in my opinion. So yeah, I think it's interesting you brought that up as well. My thing that I've changed, it's like kind of related to, it's just one slot. It's the 80th slot of my deck. And because like anybody who just like grinds one hero probably does this similar thing where you like the last one or two slots of your deck just change all the time. Maybe like up to 5 slots of your deck change all the time. But it's, I had like posted on Fab Mains. I was like, if I was going to Pro Tour, like I would bring this list. And the list had 4 different headpieces in it. So it had Warband of Bologna, like the quintessential Bolton headpiece now, Balance of Justice for like the Brutes and stuff, Halo of Illumination for Kano, and then Crown of Providence for the Guardians. Because the one way that the Guardians can like absolutely juice me in the matchup is like landing one or like more than one CNC pommel. Like that's like how they win. And it's like, man, being able to just run Crown of Providence and the first time I see that CNC with a Tunic counter up, or the first time I see a CNC with 2 cards left in hand, just sink my arsenal. And like it's gone. I don't have to worry about it. Like really it helped a lot in the matchup, like a ton. But with the rise of Dory, I started testing Take It on the Chin more seriously, because that like prevent two on the first hatchet is really good. Like, prevent the first hatchet, and if they have a blade flurry, like, whatever, good for them. But prevent the first two and get an action point, that's, like, really good in that against hatchet Dory for me. So I was like, okay, that's staying in. Like, I like that. It's really good into Kano, really good into Dory. And then I was like, wait. I can just, like, keep this inverse Guardians, and I got, this is a great Arsenal target. And, like, if the, like, I can Arsenal this, take it on the chin, and, like, when they present a CNC, I just, like, play that out, and it kind of is the same thing. So because of that, I've decided to, like, cut the Crown of Providence and then bring back in one red V for Valor, which is, like, a huge pet card for me. What it is it's an aura, blocks two. It's an aura that says you pay one as an attack reaction, and then you can charge your soul, and target attack gets plus three. And the reason that I like it a lot is because it's a great, like, a great hedge against fatigue. An amazing hedge against fatigue. Like, it makes my late game, and especially because I'm on three red Valiant Thrusts, like a yellow in hand, a red Valiant Thrust, and any card with a V for Valor on board is a three card 13. Valiant Thrust for 7 plus 3 is 10, and then I swing Raiden for 3. So it's, like, really good value late game. And it's just, like, again, especially against Victor, like, all the, sometimes I just end up charging it, you know? But a lot of the time, it's, like, especially if we're in, like, the early to mid game, I'll just kind of, like, dump my hand, play out that V for Valor, and I know at some point later in the game, I'm going to draw a Valiant Thrust, or I'm going to have enough soul built up where I can use that on, like, a Celestial Cataclysm, and just go over the top and, like, not get fatigued. It's a great way to, like, kind of secure my fatigue matchup, because I don't have a weapon that can attack normally. So, like, fatigue is, like, in theory, a real threat for me. But I bank so much value in my soul and on the board with that card that, like, fatigue doesn't typically, like, Bolton can usually get over the top of fatigue. But yeah, so that 80th slot being Crown of Providence or V for Valor, I've decided to take Crown of Providence out. So, Colin, I'll give you back your Crown of Providence. Actually, I might hold on to it because it might come back.
So. No, I just keep it. I'm probably not going to run it.
But yeah, so that's kind of like a super minor thing, but it actually changes my Victor matchup like a ton. So, but I think having taken on the chin, like, kind of led me to that. Like, oh, if I can Arsenal this, then it's like, yeah, I'm not as scared of CNC Pummel because whatever. Like, it's fine. So maybe I'm just, like, oversimplifying it. But I'm gonna go with it. I'm gonna go with that for the Battle Heart, and hopefully V for Valor wins me a game. That'd be sweet.
Yeah. V for Valor. I mean, only ever playing the other end of it. Mm-hmm. I do think it's a really good card. My question though is what that does to your game plan against Victor, because, like, I see your logic, right? You're like, okay, I Arsenal this, take it on the chin. He CNCs me, and it doesn't matter. The same way the Crown of Providence said your first CNC doesn't matter, but, like, if you, the difference is that if you draw into a power card, which whatever it is for you, you draw into, like, a good card that you put in your arsenal, and then he CNCs you. Mm-hmm. You don't have Crown of Providence, you know. Like, so do you not arsenal those cards as much? Or
it depends. I think that the main thing to point out is that even without Crown of Providence, Victor and Bravo, in my opinion, are just, like, straight up favored for Bolton. So, like, straight up. Victor's a lot closer because he gets to draw cards when he blocks. It's, like, closer to 50-50, but still, like, felt really good about that matchup. Bravo.
He runs less attack.
Yeah, runs less attack. Like, the reason it's so favored into Bravo is because, like, you can play the slow game and you just accrue so much value from them blocking with attacks over the course of the game. And, like, you just, like, kind of, you take it slow, you stop pressure effects, whatever. Then all of a sudden you have 10 cards in your soul and you end the game with a Beacon of Victory for literally 10. And they die, right? And so I think, like, starting there with, like, in my testing, I found that, like, the Victor matchup still favored for me. And Crown of Providence just made it better. And it's like, am I opening myself up to CNC Pummel a little bit more this way? Yes. But I think V for Valor, it's not just applicable in that matchup. Like, Azuris and Arachnes are scary. They can actually fatigue me because they burn cards off the top of my deck. So it's, like, also is applicable there. I don't even know if I'm answering your question. Basically, it does open up to CNC Pummel a little bit more, but it's like, I think I'm okay with that. Like, I think I'm okay. I'm okay giving up the Crown of Providence because my other headpiece is Warband of Bellona, which is also just like amazing for, it's not like I'm giving up a headpiece for like a worse option. Yeah. Like some would say Warband is just what you should be playing in that matchup. Because the floor is it blocks three.
Yeah.
And the ceiling is it wins you the game.
Yeah, so, I follow your logic for sure.
That was a long-winded answer to say, like, yeah, he might juice me with a CNC Pummel.
Okay, well, that's interesting. For me, the only change has been the unmovable. I still haven't quite decided what I'm cutting. To be honest, it's probably going to be Remembrance because I don't really need Remembrance. It just makes me feel better in some matchups. Like, I can play it a little bit differently. But yeah, like, I haven't, like, made any drastic changes or anything. I'm just playing with my blues. Like, I don't know. Do I want Dig Up Dinner? Do I want Talk a Big Game? Do I want High Roller? Do I want Bonebreaker Bellow? When most likely it's not even going to really matter.
Are you going to run that new blue from the KO Armory deck? I think we maybe talked about it last week, but when it releases,
it won't be legal for Atlanta, but I'll test it when it comes out. See, in general, yeah, I don't know. I don't think I will, especially not with as long as Bolton and Kasai are part of the meta, because like I already run so many attack actions when there's Sabers and Bolton's hero ability in the meta. I try and make my blues not attack actions. Weirdly enough, I'm feeling better after this conversation. I was like feeling not that confident, and I was like, yeah, man, this is going to be a rough podcast. I'm just going to go and talk about how I'm going to lose. But now I'm like, you know what? I think we've all, I'm a little reassured. I know how to play my deck. I'm going to go and let it do its thing and kill some people.
Yeah, we're all on the same page that we can play our decks pretty good, but, you know, it might not happen for us, and that's okay, because we're going to have fun. We'll be right back.